The release of the Savile Report into the shooting dead of 14 unarmed civilians on Bloody Sunday in January 1972 is significant because the British Army's actions on that day massively accelerated IRA recruitment and led indirectly to the deaths of thousands of people on both sides of the nationalist-unionist divide. Brit Richard Cowley is a former soldier in the Parachute Regiment, which were responsible for the 14 civilian deaths on Bloody Sunday. So here's his report into Bloody Sunday and the Savile Report's conclusions.
The British government basically sent troops initially into Northern Ireland in 1969 after a speech by the Prime Minister then of the Irish Republic, Jack Lynch, who was regarded by many as outrageous interferer, in which he therefore called for a United Nations peacekeeping force to be set up instead in the province, and for Anglo-Irish talks on the future of Northern Ireland. But instead, the Prime Minister of Northern Ireland, Major James Chichester Clark, responded by saying that neighbourly relationships between the Republic of Ireland were at an end, and that instead British troops were being called in. So this just goes to show you the attitude, the wrong attitude, that the British government and Northern Ireland were taking against the NICRA, Northern Ireland, Ireland Civil Rights Association, or the Movement for Civil Rights at the time. They were the main body of peacekeepers and people that initiated, probably through Sinn Féin, most of the demonstrations and petitions and demos. You know, they were looking for a political doorway of opportunity, a platform to launch a more peaceful initiative, so that it would quickly resolve their differences. You know, the unemployment, vast amount of segregation, apartheid, basic sectarianism, etc., by the British against them. And so that was, in my opinion, the British government's first and biggest mistake. Major James Chichester, the British Home Secretary at the time, James Callaghan, was apparently in a plane on his way to talks with then the Prime Minister Harold Wilson in Cornwall, where he then received a telephone call, a radio call, asking for troops to be deployed. Between 1969 and 1972, which January 72, there was excessive use of violence by the IUC. The IRA were responding significantly in the same way. Bombs were going off. Time bombs were being thrown. The whole place was in chaos, basically. Every well-trodden, locally known corner where IRA people and Sinn Féin, NICRA, etc., had demonstrated with petitions that were thrown out basically by the IUC consistently, they were banging their head against the wall by that stage, and they were getting angry about this. And so the government had responded incorrectly by sending troops in to try and quell the problem by force, which was their big mistake. And so by the time 1972 arrived, everybody was on tender hooks, and both sides were ready for action, you might say. Everyone was now aware of the recent deaths on both sides, and so they were expecting trouble.
Martin, what do you think? Richard's got it right there, painting a picture of what Londonderry was like on Bloody Sunday 1972, just in the run up to when these horrific shootings happened.
I think he's got the sense of crisis correct. I think that what he's missed out on is that, in actual fact, the British Army were welcomed by the Nationalists initially because they were seen as a buffer between them and the, a state which had become out of control. I mean, the IUC were leading mobs of Loyalists into Nationalist areas and carrying out killings. And, the faith of the Nationalist community in the state had simply evaporated. So to that extent, the British Army came onto the streets and were initially welcomed. Because it was a presumption that once the British arrived, they would then reform the situation and get a grip on it. And what happened, of course, was that they didn't reform the situation. They carried on allowing the Unionists. I mean, James Chichester Clark, who was the Prime Minister of Northern Ireland, was allowed to carry on being in charge. After Bloody Sunday, Stormont was prorogued. That is to say that the local Parliament, which was dominated by Protestant extremists, if you like, was closed down from London. And why did it take 2 years to do that? I mean, what the Nationalists were looking for was that to be closed down straight away. The British Army gets a grip on the situation, and the IRA would never have been happy with that because they always had an agenda of violence, it has to be said. But they would have been marginalised by that. But of course, in actual fact, the way it played out, they were not marginalised at all. The British state played right into their hands, and with all of the consequences that we now know.
Okay, so now we're going to hear Richard talking about General Robert Ford and apparently a top secret memo which came out as part of the Savile inquiry.
The Savile inquiry has dug up a number of points that have been contested, nevertheless, by existing QCs and other people. Lord Gifford QC put it to Lord Carrington when he was cross-examined in the Bloody Sunday inquiry that the government had been willing to risk the lives of innocent Catholics in order to appease Protestant opinion in Northern Ireland. Lord Gifford, Lord Gifford's line of questioning, Lord Savile said, was alleging that the design of the British government was to shoot people on the streets of Derry that afternoon in the hope and expectation that it would aid the political process. Carrington replied laconically to that, that it did not seem very likely. Now, it has to be understood that Lord Carrington has a previous military background himself. In fact, he was awarded the MC, the Military Cross, which is a very significant medal of honour and bravery, in the Second World War, in 1945. Edward Heath, who was then the Prime Minister after Harold Wilson, was also a Lieutenant Colonel and a significant regiment that he belonged to, which is now called the RHA, the Right Honourable Household Artillery, where he was actually active up until 1971, inspecting troops. So both people had significant military involvement at high-ranking levels. So Lord Carrington, who was then the Defence Secretary at the time of Bloody Sunday shootings in 72, said that there was never any question of the military opening fire on innocent civilians. General Robert Ford, at the time, expressed in a top-secret memo written just 3 weeks prior to Bloody Sunday, said that the best way to restore law and order was to shoot a few Londonderry hooligans. General Robert Ford was second in command in Northern Ireland to ground forces. But the interesting point is that Carrington, Lord Carrington, also denied that the appointment of General Robert Ford had signalled anyway a change of heart by his government. Lord Carrington dismissed suggestions, therefore, that there was a plan to deal with Londonderry by taking the sort of action which, in fact, we saw on Bloody Sunday. Yeah, he said that the suggestion of using premeditated military force simply didn't comply with the army's rules of engagement contained in the yellow card, which is issued to troops on the ground.
Now, this is pretty shocking stuff that's come out as part of the Savile report, Martin. How on earth do you think General Robert Ford expected that by shooting some Londonderry hooligans that could help restore law and order?
Well, I think what Savile has said is that played no part in what happened, and I think that's disputable. Ivan Cooper, who is a leader of the Northern Ireland Civil Rights Association and a Protestant, he's come out in the last couple of days saying, well, actually what's happened here is that senior officers have been basically excused, and all of the blame is being put on the frontline soldiers who overreacted, supposedly. And now this is jolly convenient for all concerned, apart from those frontline soldiers. I think the parachute regiment were an inappropriate tool to be using. I mean, lots of people were saying that this is the kind of thing that, you know, they're trained to go storming into places and blast them to pieces. They're not really designed for doing peacekeeping operations. So there was an element of foolishness at the very least in using the paras on that day, and there were alternatives. But I think what seems to have happened is that the premeditated plan to shoot a few so-called local hooligans has been brushed under the carpet here again. The army as an institution has been blamed, but it's been blamed in a sort of, oh well, they overreacted sort of a way. I think that there's actually evidence to suggest that there was planning behind what happened on Bloody Sunday, and it wasn't just an overreaction.
But what was General Robert Ford's logic? I mean, how can he think that shooting Londonderry hooligans is going to help restore law and order?
Well, don't forget that the parachute regiment regiment had just been deployed in Aden, which is now South Yemen, and they shot quite a lot of people when they were there, and lots of people were, I mean, you've got to remember that the British Army has got quite a long record of doing this kind of thing in Kenya, in Aden, elsewhere, and they were just going to do it in Ireland. But of course, in Ireland, you've got people on the other side who've also got their traditions of fighting back, and you're actually, you know, basically giving them pretty much what they want from an IRA operational point of view. Bloody Sunday was a tragedy, but it was also a fantastic recruiting tool for them, as was the imposition of internment. I mean, the Ballymurphy killings, when internment was introduced, lots of people were shot dead and beaten to death by British soldiers as they were being interned, and that's another. People in the six counties know about this, but most of Middle England is oblivious to this. They've heard of Bloody Sunday, but they haven't heard of Ballymurphy, just as they haven't heard of the bombings, the Dublin and Monaghan bombs, which the Garda Síochána have suggested were carried out by British intelligence.
But do you think it's possible that General Robert Ford was thinking, well, look, if we actually create an incident here, this is going to force the politicians to come round the table?
I think they were basically doing what the British Army has often done, which is the idea that brute force will get you what you want. And of course, after 30 years of hide and seek with the IRA, they've realised that that's not the way to do things. There was always a possibility of trying to negotiate a way out of this, but it would have required standing up to the Unionists. And of course, the Conservative government of the day had no intention of standing up to the Unionists. They were in alliance with them. It's good to see that David Cameron, as a Conservative Prime Minister, has accepted the Savile Report. But I think what Ivan Cooper, who was one of the leaders of the civil rights movement on the day and a Protestant, said is that the senior officers have got off very lightly here, and I think they have.
Now, let's have another listen to Richard, and here he's talking about the role of Prime Minister of the day, Edward Heath.
Well, the former Prime Minister, Edward Heath, testified in the inquiry that there was no standing government issue of a shoot-to-kill policy then. A QC clerk also drew attention to Edward Heath's request at the time, prior to 1972, Bloody Sunday, for a specific report on what would be the implications of seeking a purely military solution in Northern Ireland, which is a very strange question to ask, and considering that Edward Heath was an ex-military lieutenant colonel himself, you know, perhaps it's not. Heath then contradicts himself when he is asked in the inquiry and says that decisions were made by military officers alone on the scene as to what action to take, and yet he's previously asked for a military report. Heath insisted that in the Savile inquiry that he also had no knowledge at all of any premeditated plans to violently suppress civil rights demonstrations planned for January the 30th, 1972. Now, why would that question be raised, you know, if it wasn't relevant? Heath also went on to say that he had no knowledge of discussions among the top army brass to, one, shoot unarmed demonstrators, two, know anything of any plans to use the notorious 1st Battalion of the Parachute Regiment for an arrest operation, or three, no clue as to the Army's intention to send troops into the Bogside area, which was a no-go zone. Prime Minister Edward Heath's policy at the time was to prop up the Protestant Ulster Unionist government, which was then led at the time by Prime Minister Brian Faulkner. During the autumn of 1971, Brian Faulkner had requested from England more troops and a military offensive against the IRA, but particularly in Derry and in specific in the Bogside and the Craigan estate areas. General Robert Ford, again, the commander of land forces in Northern Ireland at the time, then drew up proposals for members of the Derry Young Hooligans, a Catholic youth, to be shot. And that's an actual extract from the Savile inquiry. Heath nevertheless denies that he ever saw that document, despite it being issued to Ford's superior at the time, General Harry Tuzo.
I think most people, many people, won't necessarily think of Edward Heath, the Prime Minister of the day, as a sort of orchestral conductor and someone who's interested in sailing, not an ex-military officer, Martin.
Well, he was a military officer in World War II, as Richard's rightly pointed out.
He was doing inspections, apparently, right up till 1971 of military units.
Yeah, I think that what Savile has done is effectively blamed the paras on the spot for what happened. And of course, I think that any sane person would realise that what they were doing was out of order. Other paras have testified against other paras, saying that they were shooting people who had white flags. They were shooting people. I mean, it wasn't just a fusillade of shots Bloody Sunday. It went on for 25 minutes. People were running in terror, and throughout that whole period, people were being shot dead, and people were coming out trying to help wounded, and they were being shot in the head, and so on. Now, any responsible soldier should realise that that's not on. But to a certain extent, those frontline troops were responsible for what they were doing and their own actions. I mean, certain paras shot and others did not. Yeah, so some paras did not misbehave on that day and others did. But I think we've got to look really more at the background of the military leadership and the political leadership. There was a definite idea that by showing the smack of firm government, I mean, the Bogside was under the control of the nationalist community, of the IRA. It was a no-go area. Now, of course, eventually that in Operation Motorman, that was got rid of. But I mean, at least some element of the truth has come out. I do sympathise with those on the Protestant side and on the British side, saying, well, there's an awful lot of other things that were not looked into. That's true. And in actual fact, there's an awful lot of things the British Army have done which were worse than Bloody Sunday, which haven't been looked into, like the activities of the Force Research Unit and under the Brigadier, or then Colonel Gordon Kerr, who was actually commissioning terrorist acts, far more dangerous and far more sinister than shooting to kill in a demonstration. But I think we are ultimately going to have to keep digging away at the historical record and trying to find the truth, not for the sake of punishing people, but for the sake of reconciliation and peace, because that's what we really want to see, isn't it?
Anyway, I think we're really privileged to have Bryn Richard Cowley, who is himself actually an ex-soldier in the parachute regiment, who also served in Northern Ireland, to do this report for us. And in this section of the report, he looks at whether or not the soldiers themselves were guilty of murder. So, are the support company soldiers, this one para, guilty of murder?
In short, well, yes. The Savile report says particularly concisely that they are. It goes on to say that the Savile inquiry has strongly condemned the behaviour of the soldiers who opened fire that day, and it says that there were a serious and widespread loss of fire discipline. Soldiers were motivated by fear and panic. And there were also, it says, soldiers who were specifically not motivated by fear or panic, but both are guilty of shooting at unarmed civilians.
What about prosecutions, potentially?
Well, I mean, I don't know anything about that. All that I've read in the Savile inquiry is that Cameron has not necessarily volunteered any specific comment on that point. He's left it open.
What about prosecutions, Martin?
Well, I'll echo the words of Martin McGuinness earlier this week. He said, well, we're going to be guided in this by the views of the families. We don't want to just drag all this up for the sake of it. There's got to be what we ought to have done in the inquiry, in my view, is to say to people, if you tell us the truth, we will guarantee that you won't be prosecuted, because we want to find out what happened. We're more interested in that than in pointing the finger of blame.
Okay, now in his penultimate report, Bryn Richard Cowley looks at whether or not the shootings were actually justified, and explains the soldiers' yellow card system.
Was there any justification for the soldiers opening fire? And typically of the Widgery report, the same thing can be said and was said by the troops on the ground, and that is that they suspected they were being attacked by nail bombs, that Martin McGuinness had in fact said in the Savile inquiry that he had placed some what he called super snipers that were overlooking William Street, and that one of those snipers is suspected to have fired first at approximately 5 to 4 that afternoon at a machine gun position in William Street, which they then obviously assumed, you know, was reason to return fire. At the same time in William Street, a nail bomber was said to have attempted to throw something in their direction. So that gave them cause to open up. And in that particular instance, two people were shot dead, two civilians. Later, at 4:05, in another area of the Bogside, well, in fact, in Rossville Flats area, this is when Lieutenant Colonel Wilford decided to initiate an action which led to support company being deployed into the Rossville area, which, however, was not in his orders. He decided that himself. And after so doing, an officer on the ground had fired two shots above the heads of known protesters because he thought that he was in danger, his rifle may have been taken, he was being overwhelmed by thousands of people. We have to realize there was up to 7,000 people on the streets that day, and so there was fear and panic at all ranks and levels. People said they'd heard shots. There was plastic bullets previously being fired that day. There was a smell in the air. Helicopters were overhead. The whole thing was very, very panicky and sensitive. And so people were apt to open up very easily. People were saying that they saw gunmen in windows and they'd fired at it legitimately. Yellow card rules were applied that day, but in the crowd and the melee and the noise, obviously no witnesses, particularly on the RA side, would want to testify to that. And also, Martin McGuinness had testified in the Savile inquiry. People suspected that Martin McGuinness had been carrying a submachine gun, a Thompson machine gun, on him that day. Martin McGuinness that day was a young man, and he was said to be in charge of the IRA at the time. Given that from 1969 to 1972 there were so many deaths, the IRA were certainly active, the paras on the ground were certainly expecting trouble and to be sniped at. People were defending themselves, their weapons, with their lives, so the whole thing was a right mess, basically. You couldn't say what was going on. But for them to shoot 14 civilians, and sometimes on the ground crawling away or running away.
Now, you mentioned something called yellow card rules.
The yellow card rule was actually quoted in the Savile inquiry, as I mentioned earlier, by Lord Carrington, who was relying upon that specific as part of his defence. The yellow card rule was an invention, basically, that allows a soldier to detach his mind from the panic at the time while he's holding a live weapon, go into his top left-hand pocket, pull out a physical card, a yellow card, which on the back has a set of legal obligations that he has to read to himself, and also shout out loudly to anybody that he thinks is endangering his life, i.e. with a loaded weapon or is about to pull a gun, etc. When he thinks his life's in danger, he has to apply the yellow card rule. So it's a psychological sort of initiative that allows a soldier to think twice, take his finger, you might say, off the trigger before he initiates an action, and all soldiers basically follow that rule. But of course, in the heat of this moment, where you've got helicopters and noise and bangs going off, it's difficult to find testimony or evidence of that.
And in a final report that he's done for us, Bryn Richard Cowley, ex-parachute regiment soldier, tells us what his conclusions are.
12 years and 191 million quid later, David Cameron issued an apology on behalf of the government, where he said that he was deeply sorry about what had happened. The conclusions of the report, he said, were shocking. The inquiry exonerated all Catholic victims. It said that they were not posing a threat or causing death or serious injury. Cameron went on to explain what happened on Bloody Sunday was wrong, and because the government of the day is no longer around, that it fell to him to issue an apology instead. Now, well, I've also served in All Ireland myself with the three para. I think it would be fair to say that David Cameron has reached the correct conclusion. It's clearly the case that there are a lot of suspicious issues that go right to the top of the government and right to the top of the MOD, and it's clearly not just the parachute regiment soldiers' fault, who are nevertheless carrying the can of worms of blame, you know.
I obviously agree with that. I think that blaming individual soldiers, it misses the point. It's a whole policy that was being pursued from the top, which needs to be recognised and investigated, but not in terms of punishing people. I mentioned Brigadier Gordon Kerr earlier, who's actually in Iraq, as far as we know. I don't want to see him punished. I want to see everything that was done in the struggle in Northern Ireland looked into in an impartial light, in view of trying to create reconciliation and peace on all sides. Lots of bad things were done by all sorts of people. Let's put it behind us and move on. But let's not forget any of it.
And thank you very much to Bryn Richard Cowley, ex-soldier in the Parachute Regiment, for that report. Do please join us at 5 on Friday Drive Time each week here on BCFM 93.2. If you have a story for us, questions about this evening's programme, or would like to suggest a guest for a future show, please go to our webpage, thisweek.org.uk, or email me at tony@bcfm.org.uk. Thanks very much to this week's guest in the first hour, Lib Dem Councillor for Clifton East and Deputy Leader of Bristol City Council, Simon Cook. Thanks also to Marina Morris and Mike Birkin for their reports, and to our old Labour Oxford economist, Martin Summers. If you're on broadband internet, you can hear all previous Friday Drive Times, including my hour-long report on mobile phone masts and wireless safety, and our investigation into leadership charity Common Purpose, as well as our special on the Good Friday Agreement and Irish history, by going to thisweek.org.uk and clicking on the archives. I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a relaxing and enjoyable weekend.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.